Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hypothetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hypothetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hypothetical, Hyperthetical. Come get some.
Beware, I live. IGN GameScoop.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me this week, Justin Davis, Scoop. Marty Sliva, Dan Stapleton.
Soup.
We've got a great show for you this week. We're going to be talking about, we got to check in with Game of the Year Watch 2015 edition. We're going to talk about those massive expansions for The Witcher 3. But first, Tijuana, Mexico.
Whoa.
Let's do it.
Once upon a time in Mexico.
That's where GameScoop fan Jesus Sandoval resides.
Jesus.
And he says, I just wanted to know, where is the Game of the Year Watch GameScoop episode for this first quarter of 2015? Very impatient. The first quarter just ended last week, literally. He says, I think Dying Light is a good contender. Mm. Probably not the best game or story, but it is a game we enjoy playing, and it's fun, above all. What do you think? Thank you for the reminder, Jesus. It is time to check in with Game of the Year Watch.
Yeah.
2015 edition. Do you fellows know how many games IGN has scored a 9 or higher this year? But Dan knows.
4.
Four.
You guys know. It's more than 4. Dan, how many is it?
I believe it was 6.
It is 6.
Wow.
Which seems like a lot. On the other hand,
it's been 3 months.
It has been, like, you know, for one thing, we cover 9 platforms here.
Gross.
So that's spread out. but it's also been a pretty good first quarter.
Yeah, a lot of things got bumped from last year to the first quarter, so
gross.
Makes sense.
They call it the 2015 bump.
Yeah, the baby bump.
those 6 are Bloodborne, with a 9.1.
Yeah.
And then there are 5 games that got a 9, flat.
We haven't got, so 9.1 is the highest score of the year so far.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, no, it's not. It's 9.3.
For what? I'm sorry.
Oh.
This is new games, not remasters.
Okay.
Got it right.
What was the remaster that got a 9.3?
Grim Fandango.
Oh, I like that video game.
Yeah.
In which case,
I didn't review it.
Oh.
Ryan McCaffrey did.
Oh.
But we'll get to those. Anyway, Bloodborne got 9.1. Yeah. The other 5 with 9s are Evolve,
ooh,
Helldivers, Monster Hunter 4 Ultimate on 3DS, Ollie Ollie 2, I think Welcome to Ollywood is the subtitle, and Pillars of Eternity.
Ooh. That's
Justin likes a lot.
Wide breadth of games.
Yeah. Yeah, very different. I brought it up on GameScoop last week, but like how different video games are. Like Ollie Ollie 2 gets a 9, and Pillars of Eternity gets a 9.
And
wildly different experiences.
Wildly different from Evolve.
Yeah.
Also.
Sure.
And, you know, there are also a few games that I personally think are contenders. Like if you look at Cities Skylines. Like I gave that an 8.5, but I feel like they've already fixed a number of things that I had an issue with.
They've been very responsive.
Right, and I think, like, especially if we're talking about Game of the Year, by the end of this year, I expect that game to have received like significant updates. Like they've already talked about like adding disasters, which, you know, would add a bunch of variety to the end game, which is like one of my big problems with it. So I would expect that one to end up being a contender for Game of the Year, even though it didn't end up being like over a 9 at release.
Sure.
What about Bloodborne? This is a polarizing game. Polarizing game. People either really, really love this game or they're maybe a little bit more like Dan.
Yeah,
about it.
There's 2 types of people in the world. There's the Martys and the Dans. My personal pick so far is Bloodborne. I think was computer supposed to do something?
Yeah, computer. Play B-roll.
We do have B-roll.
There we are. There's that little Dark Beast Parle. As someone who completely adores the Souls series, I think that, yes, Bloodborne might not be the perfect entry point. Granted, Brian Altano, it's his entry point, and he fell out of love with the game. He quit it for 2 days and then came back to it, and now he says it's his game of the year because he's put like another 15 hours into it. I think the game is fantastic. I think it's gorgeous. I think the world building is incredible. I like the new speed of combat. We are still finding out new things about the game, even weeks after we started it, which is very exciting. Mm. I think this is going to be a contender, like on the waterfront. It was a film. Yeah.
It could have been a contender.
Yeah.
No, and
I thought
like,
that was Rocky.
For the record, my contention with this game is not that it's a bad game, but that it's bad at introducing new people to it.
Sure. Mm.
Yeah, I mean, I think the consensus is, I mean, Dan, you had such a negative experience. I haven't played Bloodborne yet, but I'm intrigued because I've played Dark Souls 1 and Dark Souls 2 and didn't care for them. I didn't care for either of them, but fool me twice. You know, God help me, I'm kind of thinking about giving Bloodborne a shot because I've heard it's a little bit more forgiving and a little bit easier in some ways.
And it's one of those games that's just like everyone seems to be talking about it. Like yeah, everyone sure. in the office yeah. is talking about it, and it's almost like if you're not playing it, you're yeah. missing out on something. Yeah,
it's a big sure. coup for the PS4 as well.
Yeah, a coup.
Is that how it's pronounced?
Yeah, it's a chicken coup.
It's one of those cars with yeah. several doors.
Now, what about Evolve? I know a lot of people here in the office really like it. Obviously, got a really good score. But I wonder what like the general sentiment about it is. Is that out there?
I don't think I told you my story about Evolve, or either of you two as well. But I got a copy of Evolve, and I'm not usually big on like multiplayer arena shooters, but mm-hmm. you know, Evolve was getting a lot of praise. I thought I would give it a shot. The very first match I got matched in was a son and his dad playing together. He's like, Dad, I got him trapped. Dad, he's trapped. And he's like, good job, son.
That's incredible.
You did a great job. Now let's make sure we go get him together. And it was like this ultimate, like, and then I didn't want to, I had to like turn my mic off because I'm just like, I didn't want to like intrude on their like, okay, he's over here. Like, I didn't want to get involved in, like, yeah. what the two of them had going on.
And you were saying some horrible, horrible
yeah,
things.
Yeah, you should like, have role-played as grandpa. Hopefully they turned off their, like, whatever voice chat, because like, it's dangerous.
Oh, that's, yeah. yeah that's
that kid could possibly hear.
That's a sticky wicket.
Well, and he did. Because the dad was saying his son's name. It wasn't, like, Seth, but he's like, good job, Seth. And I'm like, should you really be, like, maybe you need to have a lesson on, like, stranger danger. And then I got to thinking,
right,
I'm like,
is someone going to search you on your first name?
It was really cute.
Let's see where this Seth is.
Seth. Siri, where Devolve. Is Seth?
But the game itself was, that's like the good and bad of Evolve. Like, I don't really like hearing strangers in my ear. That's not what my life is about anymore. I'm not. Why are you giving me that face?
You agree, you're the same way.
No, I am, but it just sounds, you sound insane. I don't like hearing strangers in my ear. That's not what my life's about anymore.
It used to be. No, I used to really, really like, you know, put on the headset and strategize with people and play, you know, big team battle in Halo, but it's just not really my thing anymore. And so I put, like, Evolve was very polished and good at what it's trying to be, but it's not for me.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, it's very much that game that demands coordination or die. I mean, it's very much like Left 4 Dead in that way. So unless you have a group of people that you're playing with routinely, it's going to be not necessarily the best experience. And I know like Vince still just adores that game. He plays it regularly. You know, I don't doubt for a second that he thinks it's a Game of the Year contender. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's going to have a strong showing at our Game of the Year vote, just because not many people have played it in to the extent that he has.
Yeah. Multiplayer strategic games that come out this early in the year, it's like people don't end up playing them through the fall.
Yeah, but by the time fall comes around, we're going to be playing a new Call of Duty. We're going to be playing probably Battlefront. We're going to be playing Halo. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's tough.
Evolve is super polished. I did not like it as much as Left 4 Dead. I think I just prefer 4-on-1000s rather than 4-on-1.
Yeah. And I agree. And part of it is I think Left 4 Dead takes you through that gauntlet.
Yeah.
Even when you're not fighting against another player, there's just a bunch of things to do. And I think one of the legitimate criticisms of Evolve is that when you haven't got your sights on the monster, when you're just chasing him around the map, it's a little bit boring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There is downtime for sure. Yeah.
Unless the monster's bad, and then you just shoot
unless
him.
Unless Seth's the monster. In which case, you and Dad got to round up and pin him down.
Poor Seth.
Now, what about Helldivers? I keep hearing really good things about this, but I haven't played it yet.
Yeah, Helldivers is a ton of fun. This was a game that a lot of, I don't know why I found that funny. The Casper Van Dien. This game is brutal. This game is anchor. I think this game's harder than Bloodborne. I legitimately think this game's harder than Bloodborne. It's this four-player cooperative top-down shooter.
I've heard it's a top-down Destiny.
It does interesting things to where you see dropships go overhead, and those are other people entering their game in the same map, which does some really interesting things. It's just brutal. It requires, you know, intense coordination, which I love here, is you can call in a dropship, but if you're under it, they'll smash you and you'll die. I love things like that. This feels like someone just played a bunch of arcade games growing up and then all of a sudden was given the tools
and
to
watched
like, make a modern.
Starship Troopers?
And watched a lot of Starship Troopers. It was probably made by Casper Van Dien. Yeah. It has this really cool like shared universe where everything you're doing is adding into these like overall stats, which I really like. In terms of the downloadable games this year, this has been one of my faves so far.
All games are downloadable, man. Marty.
Is it going to come to anything other than Vita?
Yeah, it's on PS4.
And it's PS3. On PS4 now.
Yeah, it was always. Yeah, it came across by day one.
Okay. I completely missed that. For some reason, I always thought about that as like a Vita first game or a Vita only game.
Maybe I will
check it out on PS4 then. It looks cool.
Do you have to play cooperatively?
You don't have to, but it's sort of like Freedom Wars where you eventually hit a wall. You sort of need to in order to advance.
You were saying last week, though, that you're more of a solo gamer. So
I'm much more of a solo gamer.
I
appreciate the game, but I'm not going to. Again, I like the game a lot, but I'm not going to probably keep playing it for a long time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Monster Hunter 4 Ultimate on 3DS. I've been surprised at the goodwill this game is getting. Just because there's been Monster Hunter games released in the past, and nobody seemed to be that crazy about them.
Totally. Especially not in America.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm talking about America.
I mean, Monster Hunter 3 was pretty big here. Try.
Remember that one came to Wii and, like, nobody cared about that.
Also, so this game looks good if you're playing it on 3DS, on the new 3DS, but blown up.
Yeah.
Woo! Yeah, keep this window minimized for the next couple minutes. This is a series I've just never really gotten in, which is weird because a lot of people say it shares the same DNA as Dark Souls.
That gameplay loop of go out, slay monsters, take their bones and scales, and take all the stuff from that monster and use it to craft better equipment that lets you push farther out into the world. Mm-hmm. It's really compelling. It's easy to see why people like it. I think it's interesting to see that Monster Hunters really became a mobile franchise. I mean, they release console ones and they release mobile ones, but like that, the 3DS version, I mean, it's just huge on that platform, totally. And it started as a PS2 franchise.
And again, that's another one that it really, it leans on multiplayer in order to get the full enjoyment, which I think is one of the reasons why I haven't clung to it. There's multiplayer in Bloodborne, but it's not super crucial.
Yeah. I mean, it's easy to see, super deliberate controls, same like the Souls games, just slay gigantic, huge monsters, get cool loot, use it to craft cool equipment. Like, it's easy to see why it's really popular.
Mm-hmm. Forgive my ignorance. This is Monster Hunter 4 Ultimate. Did regular Monster Hunter 4 come out here previously?
I do not believe
so. Your ignorance is forgiven because it's shared. I don't know. That's a good question.
I'm pretty sure it didn't come out here.
Okay.
We didn't review it.
If we're wrong, we apologize.
What about Ollie 2?
Ollie.
So, I played some of this. I did not play the first one. And I found it a little difficult to get my head around the
controls.
Super
difficult,
The controls are like, what?
Yeah,
I'm used to like Tony Hawk.
Yeah, this is not like Tony Hawk. Not even like skate.
It's all analog stick, and you have to like press up at the right time when you're... you have to flick the sticks at the right time when you're like jumping and landing.
And landing,
It's very much... It's just different. Like, I'm used to like hold triangle to grind.
Yeah.
Keep your balance.
Justin, earlier today, we were talking about Super Hexagon.
Yeah.
And this game sort of scratches that same itch. Obviously, it's an incredibly different game than Super Hexagon, but it's one of those games where you start it up and you're like, well, this is impossible. Like, I'm never going to get through this game because it's going to be, the worst experience of my life. But the more and more you play it, the more you sort of, like, gain confidence.
Yeah.
And it's nice to, like, look back and see, like, man, an hour ago, I was barely able to get 30 seconds of this level, and now I can breeze through that just fine.
But yeah, do it all perfect.
I've hit the next wall.
And now the worst experience of your life is still...
It's still just ahead of you. There's always a worse experience ahead of you.
Wow.
But Marty, do you think... I mean, I haven't played this one myself, but I mean, do you think it's a realistic contender for Game of the Year, or is it just a...
No, I think I think it's a really good game. I don't think it does enough different than the original Ollie Ollie to really separate itself.
Well, it's also a little bit like... I haven't played Ollie Ollie 2, but when we're talking about Game of the Year, like the politics of it, it's almost like the Oscars. We're like, you can make the best comedy movie that's ever been made, but it's really hard for that to be like an Oscar contender. In certain game genres, Game of the Year awards just tend to gravitate towards things that are, sort of epic and
your
lengthy.
Dragon Ages.
Yeah, our winners have been that, but we've had in the last couple of years, we've had stuff like Gone Home,
Journey
like
did
Transistor,
win.
Journey,
Yeah, but I'm thinking about, you can make the world's most perfect sort of arcade twitchy game, and you're still gonna have a really hard time being in the Game of the Year hunt. Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah, and like it doesn't even necessarily mean like we spent the most time playing this one. Like I've played a bunch of little games that just hooked the hell out of me, but I still wouldn't necessarily vote for them for Game of the Year because even though they are elegant and simple, it still doesn't kind of have the gravitas that you expect from a Game of the Year nominee.
For sure. Yeah.
Finally, in the 9 and Over Club, Pillars of Eternity, which I know, Justin.
Yeah, I'm kind of obsessed with it.
Is this going to be your pick so far?
It's certainly my pick so far. And what's interesting is I was away from RPGs for years, and then Dragon Age sort of pulled me back in. And now, I'm back in deep with Pillars. Yeah. I mean, this is a game that we gave a 9, and my actually personal score would be higher than a 9. I mean, I think this game delivers on all fronts. I think the writing is really, really good and interesting, both on, like, a world-building level. Like, they made all these gods, and then people worship the different gods, and sort of all the lore of the world descends from there. The writing's also really good on like a characterization level. Like your companions are really different and really interesting and have their own, you know, sort of agency and motivations for why they're doing what they're doing. And they're not all like your friends. Like there's one dude that you roll around with who's like kind of an asshole, but like there's reasons, like story reasons why you might want to keep him with you. So that's really interesting. But the combat system is also really good and interesting and rewarding in that game. It's kind of crunchy and challenging and
crunchy.
It really relies.
That's not a good word.
No, it is a good word.
No, it's
like,
not.
It's.
Why wouldn't it be?
What if you describe a person as crunchy?
It feels
that means they're like hippy dippy.
Yeah.
It feels crisp and precise. It doesn't feel like mushy combat. Like
crunchy graphics, the crunchy visuals of this game.
It's not being crunchy, Marty.
Yeah. I mean, story's good, combat's good. I think the art is absolutely gorgeous. I love those pre-rendered 2D backgrounds. Mm-hmm. If anybody was sort of looking at that game and thought, "Oh, it might be too old school for me. I don't know if I can handle that," like. You should absolutely sort of get over that and give it a shot because you're missing an incredible game experience. I think Obsidian did an incredible job.
Does it require like a love of the old like Baldur's Gate games and
no.
Planescape Tournament?
I mean, it is basically Baldur's Gate 3, except for, you know, they weren't allowed to use the Dungeons & Dragons combat system, so they had to redo the combat, but it's so Baldur's Gate-esque. It's obviously an homage to those older games, but no, a love of them is not required. Just, you know, enjoy good stories and enjoy good sort of tactical combat that requires positioning and intelligent use of skills. You'll have a great time.
Yeah, like I got into that kind of RPG, and well, the tactical RPG with Fallout, mm-hmm. which had the same thing where they kind of fudged their own version of the D&D stat mm-hmm. skill system. Ended up with special as their acronym, yeah. But like yeah, it didn't require that I already knew something about.
Yeah.
If you
this team also made Fallout New Vegas.
Played those old games,
and
you
going back further, the Obsidian guys were responsible for Fallout.
For the original Fallout.
Yes,
fun facts.
If you played those old games, you already know and love Pillars of Eternity. If you didn't play those old games, you might feel a little bit intimidated by it, and I would say you should totally get over that and give it a shot.
As we mentioned before, there are two remasters that have gotten 9 or higher this year, Grim Fandango and then Homeworld Remastered mm-hmm. Collection. You reviewed that one, Dan?
I did. That is a very pretty game. And, you know, it holds up really well because no one before or since has really done what Homeworld did in terms of doing a fully 3D real-time strategy game. Mm-hmm. And it, like, I still haven't played really any games that have captured kind of like a big scale Star Wars Battlestar Galactica style space battle.
Yeah.
And you know, this one has its quirks. When they ported the original Homeworld campaign over into the Homeworld 2 engine, we got a bunch of like user interface enhancements, like, you know, being able to issue orders when you're zoomed out. But we lost some of the kind of tactical nuance of it in formations and things like that. They're a little bit funky still, but you still get the amazing story of that game, which is, you know, basically, you know, Battlestar Galactica inspired, but it has a really good spin on it, told through these beautiful animatic cinematic screens, and with surprisingly good voice work. You get I think it was like a 20-hour campaign, 15 to 20-hour campaign. It's really well done. You also get Homeworld 2, which the story falls off a little bit, but the mission design is significantly better and just easier to get through, and I mean that's one of those games I can just sit back and you know set up a battle and then just sit back and watch it.
That's pretty cool.
It's a gorgeous game.
My favorite game of the year so far is still a game that hasn't been officially released yet. That would be Darkest Dungeon.
DD.
Man, so people talk a lot about how this game is hard.
Yeah.
And I enjoy that aspect of it, but when I hear people talk about Bloodborne, the difficulty is like. It like worries me. It's like a turn off for me. But I wonder if it's because this is turn-based. And I just feel more comfortable. Like I know it's not my reflexes; it's my mind that's being tested.
Totally,
you know? Take your time. Totally.
Yeah.
This is a game. That, I mean, there's no doubt that this game is hard and it will fuck you up. Like if you go in
you're just
unprepared.
Being cussy today.
It's the first time I've sweared.
No, you said a-hole earlier
in this show.
Yes.
A-hole doesn't count as a swear.
Totally counts.
But I mean, if you're not prepared,
Seth is listening.
I'm sorry. If you don't know what the classes do or the enemies do, you will get messed up. But I actually think the more I played this game, I don't think it's insurmountable at all. I think the difficulty is just right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the difficulty of this versus something like Bloodborne is completely different because Bloodborne doesn't have like stat rolls. Like, there's no 75% chance you're going to hit something. You're going to hit that thing if you aim it. Yeah. Whereas this one, you are taking the chance and then you kind of mitigate the odds of missing it. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to plan ahead. Like, what if I miss?
I think people that think Darkest Dungeon is super hard don't understand how important positioning is. If you were watching that video, you had your four party members, and it's so critically important that you have them all in the right spot. And if you do that, you're like halfway to success.
Yeah. Which is why it's really interesting that the enemies use that against you. Like there are certain abilities that
they push
that
and pull you. Yeah. It's great.
And when you get ambushed, you get reversed and all kinds of stuff like that. So there's a bunch of really interesting stuff to this game.
Yeah. Hopefully that gets an official release this year, because I think would be in the contender.
Yeah, all of us who've played it, I mean, even like in preview events, and then you know now that it's out and early access, that game
is
awesome.
It's coming out this year. They have
one thing that's a common thread that runs through all these games. They're all really hard.
Yeah, we don't like baby games, Bobby.
Yeah, that's true. It's interesting. The fans really like Dying Light.
Yeah,
they may be disappointed if that's not in the.
So like, many
that seems to be an early fan favorite.
So many people I know who love games but aren't in the games industry. A lot of my friends are still playing this game. They are like absolutely obsessed with it. And you know, I like the game a lot. Like I thought the sense of movement feels really great. I like the world. It's one of those games you could just turn on and have fun for a while. Sort of like GTA, where you don't really have to be doing anything. You just enjoy yourself for half an hour. Yeah, I don't know what happened. I mean, obviously, people love this game. It sold incredibly well. It was one of those new IPs that came out right at the right time at the end of January.
They did time it perfectly. We ran an article about that.
Yeah. Oh, man, look at that. That was gooey.
I didn't like this game.
Just not at all?
Jerk.
I didn't think the movement felt great at all. I didn't think the parkour being mapped to R1 or R2 or whatever it was, like that button to grab and jump.
I thought
it felt clunky and stiff, and I was missing ledges when I thought I should be grabbing them and grabbing things when I thought I shouldn't be. The running around, like that aspect of it felt good, but anytime I was jumping, and even the melee I wasn't that impressed with. I thought the world was drab and uninteresting. I mean, they didn't hate it, but...
You're just mad that the pillars in this game had an ending that they didn't go on eternally.
I would have, like, my personal score for that game would have been somewhere in the sixes. Like, I didn't think it was awful. I didn't find it to be that impressive.
I have heard, like, a lot about people struggling with the controls being mapped, like, differently. And there's a legitimate reason they do that, which is that you need to be able to use both thumbs to look at the ledge you want to land on. Mm. So you can't be pushing A to jump. Or X or whatever.
Sure.
So that makes sense. My solution, play it on PC. Mouse and keyboard works great.
It's your solution to everything.
It pretty much is.
Bloodborne too hard, play it on PC.
How do we fix Obamacare? Just play it on PC. Those are what we would consider to be the best games of the year so far. What are your picks? Let us know in the comments. Hit me up on Twitter, @DameZero. We'll check in another 3 months, at which time we'll be talking about games such as Mortal Kombat X, maybe? Witcher 3?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Which is out May 19th and looks phenomenal and everyone's super jazzed about. And then there's this little game called Batman Arkham Knight.
I've heard of it.
Comes out June 23rd. And all signs point to that this game being very, very good.
Oh, you made me sad because I forgot I got delayed again.
Well, like 2 weeks.
Well, yeah, but it was originally coming out on my birthday.
Yeah, well, Marty, what will we play between now and then? There's just nothing to play.
What are we going
to
play during E3? What will we do that week?
Yeah, I know.
Oh, Batman's going to be so good.
Yeah, this will be really good.
I feel like, so Witcher was delayed, and Batman was delayed a couple
everything
times.
Everything is delayed. Yeah. Everything gets delayed.
Yep. That's what I mean. Like, I don't want to dwell on it too much, but it seems really, really hard to make video games these days, like big AAA games.
Well, you know, that sort of ties into our next topic, which is, it was announced today, The Witcher 3 Wild Hunt is getting two massive expansion packs.
Their words.
But, you know, the way they describe them, they do sound really big.
Yeah.
So, Witcher 3, well done. Coming out May 19th, two expansions coming later. The first is called Hearts of Stone, and it boasts a 10-hour-plus adventure. That one is due in October. Then there's a second expansion entitled Blood and Wine, which offers a 20-hour-plus tale, and that's due in early 2016. Mm-hmm. And the game itself is supposed to be over 200 hours.
Well, that's if you do everything.
If you want to do everything.
That's not the main quest line.
If you want to make love to every mermaid.
Yeah, exactly.
Mermaid style.
Mermaid.
First of all, how does this strike you? The news that these two large expansion packs are coming to Witcher 3.
It kind of surprises me because this is the first time that CD Projekt has done that. They haven't done a for sale expansion to either of the previous Witcher games.
And didn't they say before that all the DLC was going to be free?
So, they make an important distinction between DLC and expansion packs.
Right.
DLC as horse armor.
Yeah.
And they will be releasing stuff like that for
free. They announced, 20-some pieces of free DLC.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think they've built up enough goodwill. I think it's weird to announce this quite a while before the game's out.
I agree.
Like, I don't understand the benefit to them. Like, why would they do that?
And it's got to be an investor relations thing. It's the only reason they would do
that. So, but I also, I think they, sorry.
I have some theories. Yeah. There's controversy surrounding this announcement. Gamers are upset. First of all, they don't like hearing about DLC before the game is out.
That would evolve.
They just don't want to hear about it. Yeah. They say, if it's going to happen, tell us about it after the game is out, because they want to have a full game. They just want to buy a full game.
The complete experience. Yeah.
And they don't like the fact that it sounds like they're backtracking on their free DLC. But
because I was going to say, I felt like CD Projekt had built up enough goodwill with people that the expansions, and I also just don't think, I don't know, like Skyrim's expansions were really good. Like, they were all, you know, really, one opened up a whole new island, and even the smaller one where you could, like, have your own house, build up your own giant house.
Do people like the Dragon Age expansion, the Haka?
Lucy liked it. She didn't love it.
It's out on Xbox One.
They launched it, and they're like, well, here you go, it's out now.
Yeah. They did the opposite of this, which is to announce it the day before it came out.
Yeah, like me, Dragon Age being my game of the year, I still haven't played it just because it snuck up on me and I was already playing Pillars.
Yeah,
and
I'm also not, I'm not super offended by this because Witcher, even if I don't do everything, is still going to be a super long game. Yeah. So the idea of more, maybe I won't even want to play more.
And it's more coming months from now. Mm-hmm. It's not
day one stuff.
It also sounds like, who knows? We don't know anything about it. But with them putting a time on it, 10 hours, 20 hours, it sounds like it's going to be just a chunk of story content. It'll be, places for you to go and people for you to talk to. And it's that's obviously the best kind of DLC there is.
But I think the reason they announced it ahead of time is because the whole idea is that they're trying to keep people from selling their game back. Right? You give them a reason to keep
That's a...
I got to hold on to this because in October there's going to be a new expansion.
Yeah, that's not a bad thought.
If they really wanted to, they could just sell these as standalone, and who cares if they sell the game back?
Well, they don't want anybody to sell the game back. That's the point.
Right, yeah.
That's what they're trying to stop.
There's also a timing thing. So this comes out in May, and if they wait until a couple weeks after the game is announced in order to announce, or the game is launched to announce the expansions, that falls during E3, where everyone's sort of probably not talking about Witcher anymore. Now they're talking about the 30 games we just saw that look really cool at the conferences.
What I'm kind of surprised at is they haven't announced, as far as I know, they haven't announced that there will be an enhanced edition of The Witcher 3. That's how they built up such goodwill with The Witcher 1 and Witcher 2. They for free put out basically free expansions in the form of an enhanced edition patch for both of those games. So that's kind of what people have built up as an expectation for these games.
Was that announced beforehand? That seems like an early thing to be announced.
It's weird to me that they didn't announce that they're going to do that for this game like they did for the previous two. When they actually have announced they are doing this paid DLC that they have not.
I don't know. I guess I understand why gamers are upset when you say no DLC and then you have these two expansion packs, but it's like you release a huge, beautiful, gorgeous, presumably good game, we hope it's good, for $60, and then you support it with a bunch of free, tiny content drops, and then you have a media expansion that you charge for. That seems completely reasonable to me.
Yeah, it's always, there's a lot of interesting psychology that goes into this kind of outrage. Because it seems like, especially with a game like this, where it is a 200-hour, chunk of content for $60, it seems like there is no amount of content you can give people where they will say, it's okay to cut that off, and then something else is going to cost more money.
Yeah,
that still inspires this outrage, which, if stepping back, makes no real sense because it's like, hey, that's a big chunk of content you're giving me for that money.
I also suspect, I don't suspect, I know The Witcher 3 is going to outsell The Witcher 2, which outsold The Witcher 1. It's like that franchise just keeps getting bigger. And I think if people are upset, that's their right. And
you can't tell somebody don't be mad.
Yeah, CD Projekt said one thing and now is doing something else. So it's like, I understand that, but I don't think it's ultimately going to matter. That game is going to be a huge blockbuster in a way that 1 and 2 weren't.
Oh, yeah.
I predict I'll put 10 to 15 hours into Witcher 3 and I'll love it. But then I'll get pulled away from Batman, and I'll just never make it back to Witcher.
You'll make love to your first merwoman.
Yep.
Say, I'm done.
It's always really rough with those story-based RPGs, where it's like, if you get pulled away...
Who are you? What am I?
Yeah, you come back, and it's like, what is going on?
My mer kid is 15? What happened?
Justin, you're a fan of that Fantasy Life game.
Loved Fantasy Life.
It was a 3DS game
uh-huh.
from Nintendo.
Yeah.
And now, is it true that today we got the first announcement for like what Nintendo plans to do on smartphones? Was this like their first game announcement?
I don't think this is Nintendo. This is level 5.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So they're not. Fantasy Life was not like a Nintendo published game.
I think Nintendo of America. I don't remember the exact relationship.
I think Anyway published it in the States.
That's what I was going to say.
They definitely didn't develop it.
What I think happened is Nintendo of America published it in order to bring it out in the U.S. But this was a level 5 game.
Okay. But Fantasy Life is.
Yeah.
Is.
Your turn.
What do you want me to say?
Tell us what it is.
Scrap the video.
I don't know what you're looking for. I thought you were going to complete the sentence. It's an action RPG from a top-down perspective. But the game's big twist is you can have all these jobs where you can be a carpenter and chop down trees, or you can be like a woodworker and turn, you know, that wood into swords, or a blacksmith, or a cook. And so I think there's 12 or 13 jobs, and you're not limited to, you can do all of them if you want. So you can see things through, like, so you go out when you're a rogue and kill a bunch of things and collect their loot. And then you switch your job to, you know, someone that works with a leather worker, and then you process that leather. Then you switch your job again to an armorer, and then you turn that into things that your character can wear. So you see that stuff from, like, end to end in a way that you don't in other games.
All right, so you loved Fantasy Life, and today we found out that Fantasy Life 2 is coming, but skipping 3DS, going straight to mobile.
Yeah.
How does that make you feel?
I don't know. Not great.
We know you hate mobile games, Justin.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. I do. I like mobile games a lot, but the game needs to be like appropriate for the platform. And Fantasy Life, you're not really seeing too much of it in this footage. But it is an action RPG where you're firing arrows and swinging a sword, and like it used buttons. Like it needed. Like I don't see how that combat and movement, like moving around the world, will work as great on a touchscreen.
Yeah,
but to be fair, like many of those jobs are non-combat. So if all they
again, they're not showing in this footage, but the game is you're running around a world like,
well, they're showing,
you
know, right here,
like Diablo style. Yeah, like you just
kill the dog.
So,
but I mean, say they redesign the combat to work on an iPad with touch controls.
Yeah. If they're smart enough to do that, then great. I expect them to just do a virtual D-pad and virtual buttons. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what I expect. And I expect it to not feel as good.
Does this tell us that Fantasy Life didn't sell so well on 3DS?
No, I mean, this is, again, a level 5 game. I think Fantasy Life is a big hit. I think it was a massive hit. And they announced the sequel's coming. I think it's a surprise that the sequel's not coming to the 3DS. Because they announced... I don't think they're like Fantasy Life 2, but they said in some interview, like, yeah, we're going to continue this franchise. The first one sold well. Level 5 has experimented with mobile in the past. There's been Professor Layton games, Professor Layton spinoffs on mobile.
The new Professor Layton got announced as a card game for mobile.
Yeah, that's the other thing, too. They also announced Professor Layton 7.
I don't know. It's a puzzle game. I don't know what the cards are like.
So that was going to be my point, is like Level 5 makes Fantasy Life and they make Layton, and Layton makes way more sense for mobile. That's a game that's a perfect fit
like
for mobile
traditional
devices.
Layton game. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Or like Phoenix Wright was ported to mobile, and those games work great for mobile, but Fantasy Life, I don't see it. I hope they do what Dan's saying and are really thoughtful about the controls, but I am not optimistic.
You have a background covering mobile games, and you still play a lot of mobile games.
I do.
And now this game you really, really like is coming to mobile.
Yeah, but again, I'm not pro mobile game or anti mobile game. I'm pro like the game being on the right place for that game. And if they do it right, like that switching between jobs and crafting things, I could totally work on a touchscreen. But I just don't want to see like a virtual D-pad that's clunkier and harder to use than just playing.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of any game that's shoehorned onto a place it shouldn't be. That's why I'm not a big fan of like first person shooters on Vita. Mm-hmm. I feel like that it just isn't comfortable enough for the dexterity required for an FPS. Mm. And so like I could appreciate what Killzone was on Vita, but I just was like, I don't want to play this here.
But Black Ops Declassified.
That was a very bad game.
What's really interesting to me about this, about Nintendo's mobile strategy, like they had said, like, oh, we're going to use our existing IP and put that out on mobile platforms to expand their base. But I'm surprised that they would take a game that came out on 3DS that was successful on 3DS.
Well, this isn't Nintendo.
Yeah, like they're
right, but they're sanctioning it, aren't they?
No, I don't think they're involved. Oh, really? This is Level 5.
Yeah, oh, okay. I thought
this is not involved. This is not a part of the whole Nintendo.
So a Japanese game company released a game on the 3DS in Japan, and then Nintendo of America decided to publish that game in America.
Okay, this is also maybe the problem of like when you publish a game, you get associated with it. So now I think Fantasy Life is a Nintendo game, even though they just published it.
Yeah,
yeah, this is not Nintendo's doing. I mean, I'm playing Sorcery on mobile right now, and it's great. Hearthstone on mobile is great. Like I play my iPad almost actually every night, but the game's got to be right for the platform.
You play that Black Rock Mountain expansion?
I bought it. I haven't checked it out yet.
Is that a drug term?
Yep. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sweet, sweet BlackRock.
New drug.
Sweet, sweet BlackRock.
You sniff it.
it's a no, sniffable. Not so much.
It's
not
a sniffable.
So it's a sniffy.
Yeah. Scratch a sniff.
Let's check in with the listeners.
Hey, listeners.
Listeners, remember you can always reach us at the email address gamescoop@ign.com, just like Cameron did. Hey guys, I'm a new listener, and I absolutely love the show. Every year a game series I love is concluded, and I am left with an empty hole in my heart.
Oh no.
What do you mean, every year a new series concludes?
Yeah, wait, read that sentence
That's
again?
Like the opposite problem that everyone else has.
Every year a game series I love is concluded, okay. And I am left with an empty hole in my heart. He needs to play some Assassin's Creed.
Seven times a year.
Sometimes I wish the game creators would make another sequel, or I think it's just best leaving it be. If you guys could make the game developers create another sequel, what series would it be?
Oh my God.
What series would you absolutely not want to see?
You think you know what I'm going to say, but I got two things running through my head.
Lay it on me.
I want another Banjo-Kazooie.
Yeah.
That's one of the things, but I want Rare to...
Spiritual successor doesn't count.
That's exciting. But I miss those. I'm really dumb, but I like the bear that makes weird noises and the bird that yells at him. A hook? I would like a Psychonauts 2.
And that's the one I was.
I would like a Psychonauts 2 a lot. And
you're going to like.
I would like Beyond Good and Evil.
Gun to Tim Schafer's head.
Yeah. Oh, jeez. I'm not going to put a gun to his head.
He's a nice man, Psychonauts 2.
He works so close. I can't do that.
He's just crying.
No, my pick is spoiled by our art behind us here. I would. If I could. Gun to Gabe Newell's head. We'd make. Half-Life 3, goddamn you.
I don't think it's ever going to happen.
I don't think it's ever going to happen either. More and more I'm convinced we are never going to play another Half-Life 3.
I think it'll happen.
Gordon Freeman's just going to be a character in Dota.
That's so sad.
No, the other one I would like is a proper sequel to the first Final Fantasy Tactics. We never got that.
Oh, nice.
They had Final Fantasy like A2 on Game Boy Advance, Final Fantasy Tactics Advance. They weren't quite the same.
Yeah.
I wanted Final Fantasy Tactics 2.
Would love that.
That's what I was going to say, is we get sequels to things, but then they're never, it's like the monkey paw curse, where like they fulfill your wish, but then they twist it around in some way that like you
I want
didn't
a sequel
expect.
To Fantasy Life. Well, here you go.
Yeah, and they made a sequel to Final Fantasy Tactics, and it was sort of so-so, and they made a sequel to Banjo-Kazooie, and it was kind of so-so. So it's like...
That's not always how it works. Like, in my case right now, like you asked me that question, and like a few years ago, like I would have had three go-to answers. I want to see more XCOM. I want to see more Fallout. Mm-hmm. I want to see more Homeworld. And like they're all, like all three of those are now basically active franchises. Mm-hmm. I have to go to Half-Life when you ask me that. Now I have to go to the cliche one.
We live in an era where, and it's awesome, but we live in an era where nothing dies anymore. Like, even something that you thought was gone forever, like if you thought adventure games are gone forever, they're back and actually like thriving now. Mm-hmm. And if you thought old school RPGs like Baldur's Gate were gone, we have Pillars of Eternity and Torment is coming out and looks really great. And Pillars totally delivered. Like, everyone's like, man, I don't know. I don't know if they can pull it off. And they did. The game's excellent.
You know, talk about like Space Sims with Star Citizen and Elite Dangerous.
And so all this stuff and like 3D mascot platformers we thought were gone. And then, you know, a few have been kickstarted successfully. And there's a Banjo-Kazooie spiritual successor. So it's like, and Shovel Knight, you know, brought back a genre that we thought was kind of gone. So
there are so many games.
Yeah. I mean, it's awesome that we live in an era where, you know, these incredible AAA, you know, Shadow of Mordor, Dragon Age Inquisition, Witcher experiences can exist alongside, you know, the stuff.
But if you could force a developer to make a sequel for you.
Yeah. I would probably say I would want like a direct sequel to like Super Metroid.
Yeah.
Or just a new Metroid game?
Or just Axiom Verge?
Like, yeah, sure. An old school 2D Metroid.
Yeah. God, you know how gorgeous that would look?
Yeah, man. Well, I would still want it to be pixel art, I think, but.
Then play Axiom Verge.
It's right there.
No, but it's not just Axiom Verge. Like, Super Metroid has an atmosphere, and it does a lot of really smart environmental storytelling, and it does a lot of things that, even on a gameplay level, Axiom Verge is incredible, but Metroid is a smarter game in some other ways.
Yeah. I wonder what series he's talking about that go away or that die.
That concludes? Nothing concludes.
Because, I mean, stuff concludes. Like, Bioshock Infinite had its two pieces of DLC, and that concluded. But I'm like, there's no way we're not going to get a new Bioshock game at some point. Like, that's just going to happen.
Yeah. You know? Nothing ends anymore. Like, Sony Pictures formed a group that they're going to make a Ghostbusters cinematic universe.
Everything's going to get their own cinematic universe.
Yeah, everything's cinematic
universe. There's
going to
be a cinematic universe. Think about that.
Yeah. I'm sure someday in our lifetime there will be another Middle Earth movie.
Yeah, they're going to remake Lord of the Rings within our lifetime for sure.
Yeah.
That's why he's
Star Wars movie coming out every year. Yeah. Like, anything that you love is never going to die and go away. I'm sure they're figuring out some way to bring back, like, Firefly.
What about people?
Except for Half-Life.
Except for Half-Life. Doctor Who.
Dan, is there another game besides Half-Life 2 you pick?
Like I said, like, my wishes have already been largely fulfilled. I do want Half-Life, and I personally think that VR is what Valve has been waiting for, because, like, if you look at the last two Half-Life games, like, the first one kind of revolutionized how stories are told. The second one revolutionized how levels are designed with, you know, physics puzzles.
Interesting.
I think Valve has been waiting for an opportunity to kind of revolutionize shooters again, and I have no doubt that they started and stopped Half-Life 3 multiple times. Just like, oh, we have some ideas, see if they work. They didn't end up working to their satisfaction. I think that when VR gets to a point where it's kind of established, I think they're going to come out with a Half-Life 3 that really shows everyone how it's done.
I hope you're right.
Half-Life 3D. Guys, I did it. I made the name.
Our last email this week comes from Brandon Gurney in Columbus, Ohio. He says, I have a short question today. Why do you dudes play video games? Short question, but also a big question.
That's a goodie. I like that.
Wait, is it why do dudes play video games, or why do you dudes?
You dudes. You dudes. Oh, okay. Talking about us. He says, I'm one of those gamers that doesn't play a game to kill time, but more so, games are a deep passion of mine. I've been a gamer since I was a little boy, just as you guys probably have. To me, it's better than watching a movie or reading a book. Games have it all. Great stories, well-written pieces of music, and amazing animation and graphics. A collaboration of the arts. Games are a wonderful experience. So again, why do you game? Please give a better answer than because it's fun. That's a given. Now, to be fair, I think he didn't really answer his own question. He said, I play the games because they bring the arts together. Like, that's not...
Yeah.
That's a valid...
I don't think games are better than movies or books or music. I think they're different.
Yeah.
And I enjoy them for different ways. I actually had this discussion a couple days ago. I enjoy games for a lot of reasons. One of them is a form of nostalgic time travel. Like, I like playing Super Mario World. And it brings me back to, you know, when I was 5 and got my Super Nintendo. I play something like Braid, and it brings me back to a time when I just got out of a relationship and was, like, heartbroken. And it's like all those emotions come back when I play the game.
What about when you're playing a new game?
When I'm playing a new game, I like to be creatively inspired. I think we all do stuff outside of IGN that require creative juices. You got to raise a kid. That requires creative juices.
Yeah.
But I like playing something
also
like...
Also requires just regular juices.
Just regular juices.
Gross.
He's talking about orange juice. Don't be gross.
Yeah.
Kids drink orange juice.
And apple juice.
Yeah.
Grapefruit juice?
Yeah. Pineapple juice. A lot of people play it for, like, the social aspect. I don't do that. Like, I know Mitch plays Dota to, like, hang out with buds.
Yeah. Yeah. But I know a lot of younger gamers do that.
Yeah, totally.
I think there are two main reasons for me. One is escapist, a form of escapism that embellishes my imagination. Mm-hmm. Like, I can go to this other world and explore new things that I will never get to explore and do in this world, and that just, like, fires off pleasure centers in my brain. And the other is I like to think, like, critical thinking, like to think strategically. So, like, when I'm playing Far Cry 4 and I'm approaching an outpost, I get to say, okay, there's, like, a guard here and here, the alarms are here and here. I think the path of least resistance would be if I approach from the west. Mm-hmm. That also is just like, oh, this just feels so good to my brain to be thinking this way.
Yeah.
I'm very similar. Like, I think games are better for escapism than movies or TV, just because you get to directly participate. Mm-hmm. There's an empowerment you get from being able to, especially certain kinds of games more than others, obviously, but being able to influence the outcome of events. That's something I did rather than a character did on the screen or on the pages. And I think it's better at that kind of escapism and empowerment. Mm-hmm. And challenge, like movies and TV and books and music and all the other forms of art might challenge you with a philosophical question, but they're not going to challenge you generally with a hurdle to
problem
overcome.
To solve.
Yeah.
I mean, I like plenty of abstract games and puzzle games, but the games that I like the most are games that have a really strong sense of exploration. You just don't know, like, you round a corner and you don't know what you're going to find there, or, you know, you dive down to the bottom of a lake, and video games are designed in such a way to, like, reward that exploration. Like, there will be something down there, whether it's a treasure, heart piece, or a monster, or you don't know what. But in real life, and I wrote an opinion article about this a long time ago, in real life at the bottom of a lake, there's probably nothing down there. Like, there's just mud down there. Like, the real world.
Tell that to James Cameron.
Like, the real world. Like, I'm always so fascinated by deep space and what people are exploring out there and the cutting edge and people that are exploring to the ocean depths and finding monsters. And we saw a giant squid on film for the first time, and that's awesome, like, learning things about our world. But our world feels like it's getting smaller and smaller. Like, there's not that many unknowns left. And so to go into a world where there could be anything and anyone, and you don't know what you'll find there, is really, really rewarding and exciting for me, that sense of exploration. The games that are the best, in my opinion, games like Super Metroid and Super Mario 64 and Castlevania Symphony of the Night, which are my three favorite games ever, combine that exploration of a video game world with like an exploration of like video game systems. Like, just in the same way you don't know what you're gonna find around the next corner, like, your character is going to level up or change or get more powerful, and, like, you don't know what's going to happen there, too. Like, you're exploring the game systems at the same time you're exploring the game world, and when they're really married together, that's, to me, the best game design there is and the games that I like the most.
You also play games so you could fight Draculas.
Fight all the Draculas.
good question,
yeah,
Brandon. I think that's all the scoops we have for you this week, though. Remember, you can always reach us at the... Remember, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Marty. Thank you, Dan. My name is Damon. This is IGN Gamescoop. And we're out.
Times best-selling author of supernatural horror, missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. Is the compass broken, or did I turn to the spirit?
Given the circumstances of her disappearance, someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil, so to speak.
Weak radio signal, 700 meters, closing fast.
There's no place for ghost stories and close encounters in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
To save yourself.
Of course. What else would it be?
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.